Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota lawmakers take your concerns to Washington as the republic-old ideological dance between state sovereignty and federal oversight continues. Deb Peters is a South Dakota state senator. She serves on the Government Operations and Audit Committee. She's also president-elect of the National Conference of State Legislatures. In that role, she recently traveled to Washington to testify against the No Regulation Without Representation Act. Opponents of that bill say it serves to shut down interstate commerce. I talked with Deb Peters yesterday about the legislation. Then I asked her for an update on the GOAC committee's recent meeting.
Sure. It's an organization that represents all 50 states and U.S. territories, and it includes about 7,800 elected officials across the United States and territories. And we not just include elected officials, but also staff. So if you're a partisan staff, for instance, in New York or California, you're also a member. And if you're a nonpartisan staff like you are in South Dakota, then you're also a member. Basically, it's a state paid dues organization. And actually, next week, I become president.
All right.
So, yes.
So one of your first duties as president-elect was to go to Washington and testify, or have there been other duties for you so far?
Yes, I have actually been president-elect since last August, and I have been doing a variety of different things, working with embassies across the globe, working with elected officials in all the 50 states as much as I can, trying to work with legislators, whether they're Republican or Democrat, educating them on the National Conference of State Legislatures and some of the services that we can provide the states. So there isn't a lot of duplicative services that states try to pay for if it's already being done somewhere else. A lot of research is done, and the National Conference of State Legislatures, we do a lot of grant opportunity research with the federal government, with some of these private nonprofit foundations, like Pew, for instance. They do a lot of discussion and review and research on pensions. So why do all of the research on your own if somebody has already done the research? So we try to pull legislators together with the foundations and the grants and try to communicate the research between the states. So we do a variety of different things. We do a lot of federal grants. So the National Conference of State Legislatures just got a $7.5 million grant to work on certifications and cross-border certifications. So, for example, our military, you know, are stationed into different states. They're moved around based on need within the bases. And if you're a CPA or an attorney or a cosmetologist, you name it, and you're certified in state A, but you are relocated to state B, we've got some cross-border issues when it comes to licensing with your degree and your training. So what we're trying to do with that state grant is talk about labor and workforce and how you get certifications to move with the Department of Military and try to work through some of that stuff. So that's a huge grant. We're working with the National Governors Association on that.
Interesting. All right, let's talk about the No Regulation Without Representation Act. I love how everybody titles these things. What is it at its heart?
Well, in the heart of that particular piece of legislation, while it sounds wonderful and marvelous, we shouldn't have, it kind of goes back to the fundamental, Revolutionary
Founding
War,
fathers,
Founding Fathers, and the flagship of that, where don't pay taxes without representation. But that particular bill is actually quite scary in the way it was going to push us back into the early 1800s, late 1900s, just for the simple reason that it wanted to shut down interstate commerce. A lot of our agriculture today is shipped out of state. A lot of our ethanol produced in the state is shipped out of our state, not used in this state. And what this would have done is said, you can sell it, and nobody has any rules or rights to regulate what you're selling except for the federal government. Well, the problem is I don't know how long we've waited for the federal government to fix a variety of different problems, but now it doesn't matter whether it's environmental issues, if it's an ag issue or a tax issue, we would have to wait for the federal government to solve it. For instance, the Judiciary Committee alone has had issues before it for over 6 years, patent reform. So eBay has sold over $2 billion has had $2 billion in profits in 2016 due to counterfeit goods and services purchased over their platform. But because our patent laws are not strong enough and Congress hasn't done anything to reinforce our patent law, that is happening. So companies and people who are doing things in our state have patents, but because the feds aren't strengthening them, we have international counterfeiters coming in and being able to sell on our online platforms. So another thing that they were trying to fix is if voters in the state of South Dakota wanted to prohibit, and this is going to be a hot topic, if the South Dakota voters wanted to prohibit all abortions, which has been the movement and the trend in the state of South Dakota, there was an exemption in this particular bill that said you had to have nexus or physical location within the state for more than 15 days in order for the state laws to apply to you. So the question then becomes, any one of our medical facilities within the state of South Dakota have employees within the state, they'd have nexus, they could fly an abortion doctor from anywhere in the country, fly them into the state of South Dakota. As long as they didn't work in the state for more than 15 days, they didn't have to abide by the South Dakota law of not allowing any abortions to occur. That's just one of the most easy ways to explain it.
Sure.
Another issue, if you want to go West River, Sturgis. How long is Sturgis? 14 days. Right. We have retailers that come into Sturgis. We have a variety of different programming and concerts and camping, and everything's temporary, all within a 14-day period of time. Well, this bill would have not allowed any of those retailers to ensure that they followed South Dakota law. The bands would not have had to follow South Dakota law. The campgrounds that set up would not have to follow South Dakota law because they were in business for less than 14 days.
Any law?
Any law. It didn't matter. This bill, this no regulation without representation, did not allow states to regulate anything within its border unless it was happening for longer than 15 days.
What was the intention of the bill? What were the proponents saying it was addressing?
Sure. There were four people on the panel. I was the minority voice trying to kill the bill. There were three majority. Two of them were constitutional attorneys, and I, to be honest, I'm not a constitutional attorney, and I could not understand what they were telling me.
Sure.
So not really sure what their point was. The other gentleman, I can see where he's coming from. He was the pork producer, the national pork producer. But the crux of the problem, I think, the fundamental reason why this particular committee had this bill was California citizens brought an initiated measure that banned certain ways chickens lay eggs. So let's just say chickens had to be so many in a cage and laying eggs, and they were not going to allow any other state to import eggs if they weren't humane, in quotes. And that was the definition of those voters. Well, they're, you know, the state of California is probably 30% of the consumption of eggs in the country. So if you have one state that has an initiated referendum, a measure that says we only want eggs that are produced in this manner, the farmers go, wait a minute, you've just now passed a law in your state that does not allow us to sell eggs into your state because that's not common practice. So that's what initiated part of it, I think. And so the ag community is like, well, that's taking away our market. The interesting thing is California passes a lot of different types of rules and laws. They have a very strict law on ethanol usage within the state of California. The interesting thing is the agriculture community in the state of South Dakota saw the rule and regulation, saw that it wasn't cost beneficial, and went to Brazil instead. So it's an open market discussion in the agriculture industry. So I can see where they want to protect their industry and protect their market and being able to sell their products within the states without states and trumping other interstate commerce. But then again, the people within the state of California voted for that law. It was so imperative to them, and it meant so much to them that they voted for the law. Who am I from South Dakota to tell California what they can and can't do? We're all 50 states. We have states' rights. We have a separation. And so that's where the rub on this particular piece of legislation is at what point do you want the federal government telling you what you can and can't do? And at what point can states tell each other what they can and can't do in a global economy where these electronic devices that we carry in the palms of our hands really dictate how commerce happens today?
So there's an ideology or a philosophy here, which is why the constitutional mm-hmm. attorneys are in the room. And then there's also a practical matter,
correct.
Which is why we look at 2017 and say, this is what the impact will be. What does this tie into the bigger conversation about Amazon and online retailers and how they operate in the state and taxation?
It does to a certain extent. There are a number of movements within Congress and within the Senate and the House. The most recent was the Remote Transactions Parity Act. That is currently being prime sponsored by our own Congresswoman Kristi Noem here in the state. And she has been pushing that piece of legislation to allow states to collect from online retailers if the business is being done in the state. It requires a lot of different things. There's a de minimis rule. Basically, you have to have so many sales across state lines in order to qualify. It protects you because the state will provide you the software for free to collect and remit the sales tax within the state, within the variety of different states. And there's a lot of audit protections. So let's say you're a business in Wisconsin and you're selling into 5 different states. If that bill were to pass, it would say Wisconsin, and you're physically located in Wisconsin, only Wisconsin can do your audit. South Dakota can't come to you, Iowa can't come to you, Minnesota can't come to you and do an audit. It basically puts some controls in place to ensure that you are not constantly under audit by 5 or even 50 departments of revenue. So that's why we are pushing the Remote Transactions Parity Act, because it puts in the controls in place to ensure states don't overstep their bounds in collecting and remitting sales tax. And so that's kind of part of why I think they brought this No Regulation Without Representation Act. Well, here's the interesting part. The citizens, let's just use the egg discussion. The egg discussion from California, the citizens voted. So now, if the citizens voted, they have representation. Now the feds are going to come in and take it away. But if you're doing business, that's a business choice to do business within the state of California. If you want to sell eggs into California, follow California law. If Amazon wants to come in and sell items within your state, let's say they do business in all 50 states. If they want to come in to do business within your state and you pass a law that they don't like, there's nothing that says they don't have to sell. They can choose to not sell in your state if they don't like your state law. But they choose to do sales in all 50 states, so therefore they should follow the laws of all 50 states.
And the testimony, how did it go? What's the process like? So there's 4 people on the panel. Who are you talking to?
So this was a subcommittee within the Judiciary Committee. So okay. It was the regulation subcommittee. And in Congress, you don't get a full panel of congressional members that stay put for the entire 2 hours, let's
right.
say. So the chairman will open it up and he'll give opening remarks, and he usually is presiding over the entire meeting. But we had movement all in, you know, people coming in, coming out, congressional members in and out. They'd come in, they'd make their point. They weren't actually there to hear what you had to say.
Right.
And so the chairman gave his opening remarks, and then in my case, it was Congressman I'm going to lose his name now, Conway, but he's the ranking Democrat member, and he gave the opposition view opening remarks. And then the chairman of the full Judiciary Committee, even though he's not on the subcommittee, gave some more opening remarks. Then they opened it up to the testifiers, and then they started, obviously, with the 3 proponents, and then I was the only opponent. And then after that, it was questions, and I had the most questions.
Yeah. And what kind of questions were you getting from them?
Well,
what could you tell about what they were wondering based on the questions they were asking?
The questions predominantly were centered around how dare South Dakota tell California what to do, or how dare California tell South Dakota what to do? Why do you think that that is right? And in my opinion, it's free market. If you want to do business anywhere in the world, you have to follow the laws of wherever you're going to be doing business. If you don't want to do business in that part of the world or in that part of the country, then don't do business if you don't want to follow the law. So they didn't like those types of answers.
Congresswoman Kristi Noem, is she part of this conversation with you or not?
The interesting part about that is she requested to testify on this bill and be a proponent as well. And the chairman of Judiciary denied that opportunity. So having another member actually have that request denied is very unusual. So she attempted and was very upset. So I made a point in my testimony to bring her name up a couple of different times and also make the point that she was denied the opportunity to testify.
Based on what?
Well, this particular chairman is not fond of the congresswoman or myself. So it's all personality.
Okay.
Yep.
So what happens? We'll just leave that there.
Yeah.
What happens next then?
Well, based on the conversations of the committee members that were coming in and coming out, this particular bill probably will not move anywhere. I don't believe it can get out of the subcommittee. If the people who came in and actually made comments stayed with their comments and didn't change their vote, we had all of the Democrats and a majority of the Republicans see the way I saw things, the minority view. So they don't have the votes to get the bill out of committee.
All right. So this is on July 25th.
Yes.
Which is the same day as the GOAC meeting in South Dakota, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So tell me, you were here before we talked about what the sort of expectations of that meeting was, what we were still trying to find out about Gear Up and, I shouldn't say Gear Up, what we're still trying to find out about the audit on Mid-Central. And so did you listen into that meeting then?
I did. So I flew out Sunday before the hearing in Washington, D.C. and called in all day on Monday. So the GOAC hearing was actually 2.5 days worth of hearings. And I listened into the hearing all day on Monday. And basically the first folks up were the attorney general, and he gave us his opinions on where they're at as far as the investigation and court hearings and court dates. They're still trying to push for court dates. They still haven't been given court dates, which is very frustrating to the process. And then we heard from Auditor General. We've heard from Doug Decker, our LRC staff, as far as rules, process, procedure. And then we talked to Dr. Schopp in the afternoon about the Department of Education and their process and their procedure for dealing with the audit findings and how the notifications happened throughout the system. So,
which conversation was the most sort of insightful or let you know something that you didn't already know?
Well, because I was on government operations and audit back in 2015, I was on the committee that had the audit finding back in August and September of 2015 and read the audit finding, talked to Dr. Schopp back then. I was on the committee when the folks from Mid-Central were asked to come in and talk and testify in front of government operations and audit. So there wasn't a lot of new information, in my opinion, from that perspective. Now we're going to go through and we're going to bring in three or four different folks if they come. Now we only have statutory authority to bring in state agencies and state employees and talk about state contracts, but we are inviting the auditors that audited Mid-Central up until 2000 through 2014. So we're going to bring them in and talk to them if they come. Now they don't have to, but we are going to send them written questions and hopefully they'll respond in writing and come in and answer questions. So we're going to send it to the auditing firm down in that neck of the woods. There's another couple of contractors that were a part of the Mid-Central discussion, and we're going to send written questions to them as well as far as what their roles were, what they saw, and those types of things. And the committee had to have all of their questions in by Tuesday. It was 7 days after the close of the second day's hearing in order to get questions into staff so we could write the letters to send out to these entities. Dr. Schopp was included in that, as well as Tammy Darnell, who's the finance officer for the Department of Ed. So we're going to continue working through those questions, bringing all of those folks back. On top of that, we're going to bring back the Internal Control Board because the audit finding that GOAC brought in the Mid-Central board members in and the manager of that. We brought them in September of 2015. Then the disaster happened and the fire. The state legislature and the governor passed pieces of legislation putting in place an internal control board. And they have been busy working through, and we have a whole new process and procedure that was cut short in the discussion in July. We're going to bring them back in August and really delve into the changes that we have made so far. And then going forward, how do we continue to make changes to ensure that we don't have this situation ever happen again?
Next meeting, August 29th.
That is correct.
Correct. All right. We'll tune in then. Hopefully you'll come back and give us an update on that as well.
We got a lot of work to do, and hopefully we can get all of the questions answered in the right manner, in the right place, and in the right form.
Deb Peters, thank you so much for being here again. You've been listening to Deb Peters. She's a South Dakota State Senator. She serves on the Government Operations and Audit Committee. She's also President-elect of the National Conference of State Legislatures.